Thank you, Jack. And thank you for your lecture. I hope you all enjoyed Jack's lecture as much as I did. I thought it was marvellous. Some of those new points, revelations. A new scripture being written for man. Anyway, I got to the point where I acknowledged that I had committed the most insidious crime of all, and that was to allow myself to be hurt. So now just take off from there in relation to, and keep on threading along with human rights. So in this, by allowing such a thing to happen, not only have I deprived myself of, say, something to do with a human right, but I've deprived the others who I allowed to do this of some awareness. Now, the point I want to make here is something to do with ARC, understanding ARC breaks and this type of thing, upsets. Now, if you look at it, spirit, mind, body, and product, if I think something, if I mock something up, then I have produced, you know, that's a product. So that would be a product of the spirit working through the mind and the body and produces something. So you get a product there, that would be the mock-up. Now, if I'm doing that and somebody doesn't quite duplicate what I'm doing, in other words, they get a picture of my picture, then they haven't quite got mine, so they've got their own. If they have a fight with it or an upset with it, they are fighting with their own upset, sorry, with their own mock-up. But I want to explain this very, very carefully so you can see, you know, what one causes when one lets people have upsets with one or one lets people hurt one. Say somebody comes along to me now and I am doing something and I don't quite get it across. They don't quite duplicate it. They don't. I'm using duplicate here instead of understand, because understanding, by definition, belongs to the physical universe only. Like, it's comprised of affinity, reality, and communication. These go together to the extent that you have affinity for something, so it becomes a little realer, and the more you communicate about it, it becomes realer, and the more affinity you have for it, it becomes realer, and these things go around until they comprise something, say, called understanding. Now, affinity, by definition, has something to do anyway with distance tolerance. Communication has something to do with distance tolerance, cause, distance, effect. So you see that these things then are no more than the physical universe. So understanding in totality is just part of the physical universe. And there is the love that transcends or passes all understanding. So then, if I'm putting out something, I'm producing, I, the spirit, who animates a body called John McMaster. I think something and I put it out there and I don't make sure that it's duplicated or somebody doesn't want to duplicate it, and they get their picture of my picture and then they get upset. Now, if you look at it, you will see that they are not upset with me or even my picture because they didn't take the trouble to duplicate it. Or I didn't take the trouble to make it duplicatable. So what they are upset with is their picture of my picture that I produced, say. And if I haven't produced anything, and they've just got a picture of me that they got from someone else, this could be, say, the third partying activity. Like, I'm not allowed, say, currently I'm not allowed to be seen, my name isn't allowed to be mentioned, say, in the world of Scientology. So what are they, all those people are getting? They're going to get a picture of a little body called John McMaster. And they will mock up something. And when that little John McMaster is put in some sort of condition and it's announced to the world at large, they will be putting in that condition their own mock-up. Not me. I'm free. You see. So this is the trap in that level of understanding. You cannot ARC break. You cannot upset spirit with spirit. You can only have the upset with a product in the physical universe. So, it's when the way Jack and I have started handling that now is we simply say, do you have an upset with those things which comprise the physical universe? Matter, energy, space, time, life, mock-ups, thoughts. Do you have an upset with any of these? And we check it out, you see. And the guy maybe has an upset with matter or whatever. And we say, right, you're upset with matter. Is it an affinity upset, a reality upset, a communication upset, or an understanding upset? And he says, ah, it's a communication upset with matter. But on the communication upset with matter, is there something known, something unknown, something curious, something desired, something enforced, something inhibited? Is there a nothing, or is there something false? And whatever reads, you say, boy, you have a false communication upset with matter. And the guy suddenly looks, bom, 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 and he finds something. And so if he had an upset with matter, energy, space, time, life, thoughts, and mock-ups, if he had an understanding, if he had an upset with all of those things, you'd take each one and handle it separately. Until the whole thing fans out and he sorts himself out in relation to this. But what you're doing there is you are actually working with what is. You see, whereas the technology, the Scientology technology, for instance, says, do you have an ARC break with someone? Does someone have an ARC break with you? But no one has an ARC break with you. If he has an ARC break, he's having an ARC break with his mock-up of you. Because if anybody sees me just as a body, then they're not seeing me. So they're not having an ARC break with me or an upset with me. So then, if I allow someone to, say, hurt me, it's because I, too, haven't taken the trouble to see them. And I've got a couple of little lies on the line. Because I am unhurtable. Really, spiritually unhurtable. So what am I agreeing with that I say I'm hurt? You see? What am I, where is my confusion? And it is a confusion, and I look at it and I sort it out bit by bit by bit, because every now and again I think I'm free again, I'm free of all possibility of hurt. And then gazonk, you know, and it comes in just phew. I get it, because I'm free, you see, and I'm running around and I reach for this one's love and receive that one's love, and I feel I have infinite reach and infinite reception, and all is marvelous, and all of a sudden I'm wounded. And I'm wounded on something called love. Then where did the confusion come there? And right now I'm carrying around a little thing that I'm not quite sure about, you see, in relation to a relationship. What haven't I seen in relation to a relationship that I feel hurt about something? What didn't I duplicate? Well, it's always a limitation when you're hurt. It's because, like, for instance, you make an agreement. I made an agreement with someone that we would play the game of duplication with each other. We would never hide anything from each other. We would bring it all out, all the time, so that we could move faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. Then we were separated. And this one had done various things that happens to be a he didn't want me to know about. Of course, I immediately knew, because there was a barrier between us, I immediately knew there was something repelling us, you see, and I said, what is it? What have you done that you haven't told me about? So the other one says, I have the right to communicate about what I'm going to communicate about. So I said, fine, but if there's a barrier between us that's spoiling our senior game of duplication of each other, to set each other free, why don't you let it go? And then suddenly I get the feeling of being less than I really am, because I now don't allow myself to see what, if he thinks I see it, he's going to feel unsafe. Now, why does he want to hold that there? You see, this is the whole stupidity of it. Why won't he tell me something? Whatever it might be. Why won't he tell me? He won't tell me because he's afraid of losing me if he tells me. Say, of losing my, you know, me as a terminal. And so there we are. And you see, so you latch on more and more and more. The more you give each other losses, the more you are stuck. But the less able you become to handle the losses. And right now, whilst I'm talking to you, I'm handling my own loss. And I'm thanking you very much for being here whilst we look at this. Because, you know, it's like, and I have the ability to see everything over there. Even if it's hidden in, you know, hidden in, right in the center of the earth, I can see it. But why did I suddenly think that I might make him unsafe if I saw it? See, the interplay that goes on in these relationships. You see, why did I then deny myself the right to see and know what I can see and know and never hurt? Now, when I started off telepathically auditing people right across the world and so on, and I knew I could do it, I just used to go and do it. And then one day, I suddenly thought, that's very rude of me. That, you know, that person mightn't want me to know that. And so I put a stop. And then I had another look a little bit later on, and I suddenly realized, oh, you fool. Nobody's going to object to you being anywhere so long as you haven't any motive. Now, if you're just going to find out about that guy so that you can be a little bit wiser or a little bit more knowing or have a little bit more status or something, then that is rude, very rude. But if you're just simply going there to help a guy effortlessly free himself, either knowingly or unknowingly, and many people know I'm there when I'm there. But some of them don't quite, but it doesn't matter, but they know something good's happened. And I now, having reached the stage where I knew it was all right for me to occupy exactly the same space with another being anywhere across the universe, because I didn't want, I had no motive, except that that guy should be freer, and we should love each other more. And it wasn't even to pull the love to me. It was so that in my loving of you and your loving of me, so we reach this way, that way, every which way, and love everyone else more. Now, what I wanted out of this particular relationship, because it seemed to have so much promise, was that as we moved together across the world, this other chap who was my director of review, we would generate in this love, you know, my setting him free enabled him to love more, more, more. He did the same for me, and we did this, and then those did it for each other. And when you moved, you just moved, and this happened, because this was the intention. And it wasn't for any other ulterior motive. It didn't have any sex on it. It didn't have, like, I'm now going to be, my sexual potential is going to increase 1,000-fold because of this. It didn't have that at all. It was just that desire or intention that I can be duplicated and you can be duplicated, because I don't know anything nicer or kinder that you can do for anyone than to just know them. Know them, never believe them or trust them or have faith in them, because you are insulting them. You are saying, I'm not quite sure whether I can confront knowing you as you really are, so therefore I'm going to trust you so that I've got you hooked, you see, because if you do something wrong, I'll say, but oh, I trusted you. You see, so the nicest thing anyone can ever do for me is to know me, and to help me to be that free that I can wear myself just freely and everything of me can be seen. So many times, and that's probably happened to lots of other people, people have said to me, you were Jesus Christ, weren't you? See, I've looked at it. First of all, I was slightly flummoxed. Then suddenly I knew what to do. And I said it at the International Congress in London, said it on the platform to a few thousand people so that they would realize what I would do in future. I said, I wear myself so freely that you can see anything you want to see in relation to me. And if I'm not that free, then you can help me to be that free that you can see it. If I say yes to you on that question, I will be evaluating. If I say no, I will be evaluating, and it will not be real. Let me wear myself as freely as I wish, then you will see if you wish to see. And if I am not wearing myself that freely that I show you who and what I have been and what I am, then you help me to be that free to show you, and see where we go from there. So that was a whole new look for me. I'm glad I was asked the question. It's like I've had, really, in these last few years, the most fantastic education. Jack was talking about a perennial student. Well, I don't know that I can call myself anything much better than that, because everything I've been doing has been a new look, a new knowing, a new look, a new knowing. On all these hundreds of television shows that I've done, I'm glad I did them, because if I hadn't been asked some of those questions, I would never have got, you know, some of the answers and some of the realities and some of the knowing. Like somebody suddenly confronts you, you just, like a little, I'm not 14, I'm not a little 14-year-old boy, I know, but sometimes I feel, in the whole of the magic of the new things I'm seeing, and the sort of, the bounds of freedom that I can experience and continue to experience, I sometimes feel like a little boy who's just looking at life, all anew, and the things are brighter, brighter, easier, happier, and love is freer, and people are more beautiful, and so on. And this is how I was feeling one day, and I was on a television show in New York, and the interviewer said to me, "How do you feel about being so famous?" Now, I'd never looked at that before, ever. See, because, so far as I'm concerned, it just was something I'd never looked at. You know, it was something I was doing, and I was excited about it, and so on. Well, I said, I laughed, and the interviewer said, "What are you laughing at?" And I said, "Because I never put me, John McMaster, and fame together." And then, so the next question was, "Well, do you mind if I just have a look at it before I answer the question?" And as I looked at it, I saw instantly, fame, what is it? It's simply, in that instant, I knew the willingness you get from the people of Earth to be what you are. Just to be what you are. And as I got this, it was just quite okay, you know, for me. As I said, well, if that's what I've got, and if you accept that as fame, I feel very, you know, very happy about it. Anyway, I would never have looked at a thing. It may seem simple and silly, but I'd never really looked there until this person said it to me. And there were many, many other things I learnt, you know, in handling these things. It's like this constant education, constant learning, constant knowing, constant raising of one's confront, constant handling of things. Now this is all like part of the human right. The human right of self-discovery, and so pan-discovery, if you like. And I suddenly found I had an answer to this. And I could handle that. And I could do all these other things. And I know that everyone can. Excuse me, I wished, and I did suggest it to Ron, that everyone who reached the so-called state of clear should have gone the same route. See, because I went off that way. And I did that and that and that and that. They didn't have to necessarily do everything I did, but I wanted them to have the same chance to grow wings as I had. See, first of all, when Ron, and you know, wanted me as the first clear, I agreed to be it. That wasn't me in totality. You know, I wasn't that thing. But I agreed, you know, that I would represent this particular state. So I went out and I represented it. And it was like, I thought, well, it would be so nice if he'd let me sit in a glass case on top of a mountain and really look at what I've got. Because I didn't, you know, what I said earlier, my doing this was way ahead of my awareness. I didn't know really what I had yet. And it was changing all the time anyway. So instead of that, he thrust me right into the middle of the world, and the world is a very busy place. And I came here to Los Angeles, and I gave that first lecture in March 1966, and it was all right. You know, like, I remember once one person came up to me. There were so many concepts. Clear has been defined, you know, so many ways, but I think it's such a pity to have to define it. Maybe give people an idea of what it might be like. But you being clear, are you being clear? You know, and you can be clear any single split second that you decide. And you could even be permanently clear if you wished. But these technologies and things are something that are guiding lines that help you. And if you know what I'm being a wise aleck and saying you can be clear, of course you can. But it's like, you know, these... we're not going to call it Dianology anymore, but these are stepping stones that will help you to discover these things. Anyway, sitting in the middle of the world and being as active, then suddenly I was here in Los Angeles, and Joe Pine heard about me, and he knew about Ron Hubbard, and he was going to see this first clear. So they said to me, "Oh, he'll make minced meat of you. You mustn't go on that show. Joe Pine is terrible, you see." So I said, "Well, what have we got then? If someone who hasn't got it can make mincemeat of me, what have we got? So you better let me go, and if I'm made mincemeat of, we'll find out whether we've got anything." So finally they agreed to let me go on the Joe Pyne show, and that was my first little flutter into Technicolor TV. Anyway, it wasn't too bad. And Joe Pyne and I sort of fell in love with each other secretly, behind everything, you see. And he had me on his show again the next morning. So that was all okay, and we were very friendly the next morning. And from there, I became a little bit of a novelty, and so I was asked onto more television shows and more television shows and more television shows and so on. And then, you know, did more and more, and then traveled around the world and did some more television shows in other countries. And so it went on and went on and went on. Well, behind, for me, that is a trail of loveliness, of constantly increased knowing, of, you know, more and more awareness of people, and, you know, what people's rights, the human rights, really is. And I have, for myself, and it's not a finality, reached that stage where I consider the basic right, as I said earlier, one's right to have all barriers removed from knowing oneself. Now, obviously, the barriers are there. They're superimposed by generations of time. They're superimposed by all sorts of things. And then it isn't an overwhelm, actually. And the sooner one begins to occupy those viewpoints which enable you to see the multiplicity of time streams. You see, if I keep on saying there's just one time stream, there it is. It's all mixed up, of course. But there it is. It's just one time stream that goes down that stretch of trillennia. Do you think we would have made it quite like that? Not interesting enough. So you can get various, what would you call them? Different frequencies, say. Whole new concepts. And you can see all of this. Anyone can see it. And so as you begin to see this, the picture gets more and more and more into place. But it isn't even a static picture. Like the dynamics. If you look at the dynamics, you can find they're imprisoning things. Look at them. You see, you buy it. You say, oh, that's a workable datum. Fine, it's a workable datum. But for heaven's sake, when it no longer is a workable datum, drop it. And drop it fast. It was a guiding stone to that first step. But if you continue to try to make something work when it no longer works for you, you're betraying yourself, you're betraying your human right, and you're betraying everyone around you. Because now you are forcing it into something. You are trying to make it work when it no longer works. Now, Sri Aurobindo has made the mother who runs his ashram in Pondicherry now made a statement, which I think is a marvelous one. And the statement is that the most difficult thing you can ever do is to leave that which has helped you to get where you have got. Because you will have people telling you you are a traitor. You will have all of those things happening. Now, if you took Christianity and you could use it that far, and you knew that you had now got from that doctrine all that you could get, if you sit there and don't move on, you are making it wrong, and making it wrong for others. And so you spin yourself back into it. Now, it is exactly the same with any ology. You can take it. It's not being disloyal to say, look, I used it, and look how far I got, and now I can fly, and I'm going to fly, and I'm going to find new things and new knowings. And if any man thinks that he has the right to tell you that you cannot do this, then he's a bit crazy. And he has some other motive than setting people free. But boy, when I'm free, and I know I'm free, how can someone come and say to me, but you are not, because I say you are not. You haven't run through my OT10. How can you be free? I say, but I've seen it all already. You know, I've seen it all already. I've taken that off, and I don't have any surplus petticoats or underpants or anything anymore. They're all gone. And this is like, you know, say the loveliness of human rights. It's all very well looking at all those things. Like, you know, people have made great statements, like Thomas Jefferson. I think some of the things he said are marvelous. But don't stop there. Like he indicated, I have sworn upon the altar of my God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. Now that's a marvelous statement, because you begin to look at the tyranny over the mind of man. Right, look at it, observe it, and you'll see so many forms of it, but don't get stuck in the observation of tyranny to the extent that you are not expanding and expanding and expanding. You know, just don't make a banquet out of tyranny. Spot it as fast as you can, erase it by inspection, and move. I know one day in England, the Guardian's office, I'll tell you this because it's quite interesting. I had been sent from Greece to go and do a repair mission at St. Hill, because St. Hill Manor and the organization there was going down, and going down very fast. And I was sent by Ron to repair it with some others. And when we got there, it was a time in England when the government was attacking Scientology very vigorously, you see. And there were lots of negative articles, and the television stations were clamoring to have a program on Scientology, designed mostly to put Scientology down. Well, various people appeared on these. The television people had asked for me, but the Guardian's office had said, no, you mustn't have John. You see, can't have John, and so on. And they went themselves, and every time they got downed, because they went all equipped to fight. They went there to fight these guys. They knew that they were going to be down, so they were resisting what these guys were doing, you see. Then eventually the students at St. Hill said, well, why don't you let John go on television, because he is the one we want on television. He is the better one to represent us by our consideration. And the Guardian's office then announced, you couldn't do a thing like this to John. He's all love. These people would make mincemeat of him, you see. They're so evil they would make mincemeat of John, and John's all love. And this was relayed back to me. And for a moment I had some faith and fury. So I got my chance I was asked to lecture to the worldwide staff and the Guardian staff and so on. So I got my little chance to just illustrate a point. I said, would you consider that in order to become clear, one would have to have quite a confront on evil? You know, quite a confront on it, to become clear and maintain it. So they said, yes. And so I said, to become the first clear, would you say one would have quite a confront of evil? So they said, yes. Yeah. So I said, well, now I want you to have a look at it. There is such a thing as evil. It is mainly what one doesn't know, the unknown. Now, the faster you can know, the less you are going to have that is evil. Therefore, do not sit back and make a banquet out of evil. Spot it, handle it, spot it, handle it, and keep growing and growing and growing. Don't sit there making a banquet out of evil. Because we know some of the shows when I first went on, there was a tremendous animosity towards Ron Hubbard and towards Scientology. And these guys would come off with a barrage of attack. But I knew they weren't attacking me, the being. So I just sat there. And it came across. I didn't resist it. It just came, got lighter, until eventually, it even happened with Joe Pye. The guy was over in my lap. And he liked it. He was throwing things at me with such force, you see. And I just didn't have any resistance on it until eventually he's over here and he likes it. And all of a sudden he finds out what he's doing, gets slightly embarrassed, dives back again and says, well, what? And he asks you not to talk. And if one had that level of tolerance and understanding and knowing to just receive the barrages, and it's not so easy all the time, I know, but in these particular times it was easy for me. And what's more, I knew why. Another reason why it was easy is because I knew I was representing man. I wasn't representing Scientology, in fact. I knew I was representing man, and if I had something that was worthwhile for man to know about, it would be okay, it would get across. And if it wasn't worthwhile, I didn't really want it to get across anyway. And so that is the sort of like the knowing I had that enabled me to sit there, receive the barrage, until the guy had totally discharged his animosity, and suddenly he's flooded over himself into this, you know, safe space, if you like. Now, I'm not saying this as a smart aleck. It's just because I knew that I had something that would be worthwhile getting to man, then man would support me, or whatever it is. Man would flow with me. Man would have tolerance of me. And even though this one guy was set up and carrying out orders, you see, it was all pre-planned, the attack on Scientology. It wasn't like it was a spontaneous thing happening in present time and he was displeased. His program, the interviewer's program, was pre-planned. Now, I would never pre-plan anything because I wanted to be there in present time to handle whatever happened when it happened. So I never prepared a whole series of defenses and smart comments that I could just fling back and we could just have a, you know, sort of tit-for-tit battle. That wouldn't have done anybody any good at all. So to this extent then, you know, I learnt and I came to know, and I learnt and I came to know, and more, then I, you know, moved into that zone, and it seemed like a natural thing to be moving into the international scene on human rights, and to finish up working on a mission at the United Nations to do with human rights, and going around seeing all the ambassadorial staff, you know, and helping them to feel safe, and looking with them at their country's problems, at what one could do. Just one little datum. Suddenly you give it to them, and it's just like magic. It's not because you're so clever. It's because you've had a chance to observe and observe and observe, and you now are observing whilst the guy's talking. I remember once I saw the ambassador of Tanzania, and he had been warned beforehand by someone who was very anti-Scientology in the United Nations. I didn't know, but I just hit this barrage of antagonism. And it was just running until suddenly I listened and I realized that this guy was on a circuit. It wasn't even him talking. He was just relaying a communication that had come from somewhere else. So that I knew. And he was just saying thing after thing after thing, hostile to Scientology, you see. And so I just let it run, and then I decided, well, if he's got to be on a circuit, he's not feeling very safe with me. So if I widen something, then he will become safer. So I widened something, widened the space, didn't intrude anything, removed any type of resistance I might have, until that circuit, he suddenly realized, and that circuit was getting further and further and further away from him. And you could see it sort of spinning, and he was coming up, 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 until he started communicating. Then he asked me a few questions. And then I said something, and it was the wrong thing, and back came the circuit, because I made him feel unsafe. Then the circuit came back and started playing again. So then I had to repair one of my own error. And then eventually, about 2 hours later, he said, oh, come and have some coffee in the delegates' lounge. So I went to the delegates' lounge, and he invited all the other ambassadors of the African state. He said, come listen to this, it's marvelous. Somewhere along the line, he got safe enough to ask me something which I could just put in a datum. Just one little datum, whatever it was, is erased now, but it was just what he needed for his country. He said, is that what you really do? I said, yes. And so then he wanted the others to know as well. But like, that came about, I think, simply through coming to know what people really are. And knowing that one can know. And knowing that one can be aware of all these things. And if I go around carrying a hurt, you see, for any length of time, to the extent that I'm doing that, I'm committing a crime against my human rights and against everyone else's human rights, because I'm not looking at something. Sometimes it might be a bit big to look at, but nevertheless, in the long run, I would like to take responsibility for my end of it. And funnily enough, when I have taken full responsibility for my end of it, all the mock-ups that any Scientologist has of me will erase. So I'm not such a smart aleck. You know, when they won't mention my name and they have their own mock-ups and so on and so on, those will persist until I am perfect. So one of these days you can help me to become perfect and have that whole thing erased. Because it is so unnecessary to have them with their attention stuck on something when it could be being used creatively. You see, this is like where we can look in, how could we change the current pictures on human rights? How can we help people to not be protesting, I have lost my human rights, when they do not even know themselves, and that their basic human right is to know oneself? See, so this is the area we can look in. Well, all of you can look in this. You're just as wise as anyone, certainly just as wise as I am in relation to this. And you put your attention into that area. How can you help this guy find out a little bit more about himself and want to find out more? Because one reason why people do not want to find out too much about themselves is because they have a consideration there that it isn't safe, you see. It isn't safe to expand, and that's why. So we have got to show them somehow it is safe. In fact, it's infinitely safer. And so you get them, you know, coming out of the inversion here into wanting to know. Boy, whatever things we can do with each other now, you know, people have fairly happy marriages, people have sad marriages, people have exciting affairs, people have exciting games they play. And they play them well, and they think, they say, well, what do I want to change? I'm doing fairly all right, thank you, I'm better than that guy over there. But he measures himself by someone who's not very happy anyway. And you'll find that people will tend to have their yardstick by what suits them and enables them to be just, you know, all right and safe. Well, they don't need to do that. They don't need to have any yardstick. They can just be and allow another to be, but not just be still or anything like that, to be, you know, and sort of be permeating, knowing it's all right, that it's all right, you don't want to hurt, and the other guy doesn't want to hurt you. Well, what I'm talking, somebody said, I have said this before, but it's relevant here. Somebody said, John, when are you going to accept that you're about 2,000 years ahead of your time? And I've momentarily accepted it. I said, all right, I will, but it didn't make any sense to me, really. And then when I was going back on the ship from New York last year to Cape Town, I had a lot of time to look. And I looked at that because it still rankled. And I suddenly realized, if you've got it, you can communicate it. But if you haven't quite got it, you can't communicate it. So if you haven't got it, you're not ahead of your time at all. So if you haven't quite got it. If you've got it, you can be in present time with it, and people are quite able to receive it from you, because you'll take the trouble to communicate it in such a way that they can receive it. And you won't even make the words so important. You'll have that concept there just floating through, so the words just peel off and erase. And the concept comes through, and the guy gets it. I did tell you about lecturing in foreign countries and so on, where I spoke in English. I told you about that. But it's a tremendous experience when you suddenly realize that language is only one part of communication. It's only one part of sound, and sound is only one part of communication. There is such a multiplicity of media through which one communicates, a look, a gesture. You can write, you can do, you know, it's like, there are so many. There's the, right up to telepathic communication, and then that which transcends all of that, just the knowing. So you've got this type of thing going on. Why then, if I'm talking to an audience, should I make my words or my selection of words more important than the knowledge that this is only one tiny little veer? I am making a sound and using words whilst I make the sound. Why then should this be a barrier to this basic concept that I want to get from me the being to you the being, which I can get without speaking anyway? I can flow safety to someone and someone can flow safety to me without ever uttering a word. But because we've got all these little tools like talking and words and languages, well, we like to flaunt them, I suppose. And it seems like that's the right way to do something. You go and you communicate, you talk with words. You know. Call it a lecture, but it seems such a limiting thing, because I feel, for instance, when I'm standing and talking, I never prepare it because it wouldn't be at this moment in this time with you or whoever it is. But people somehow flow something to me. And as it's coming, suddenly something happens and something ripples out. And even if I've said it before, it ripples out in the now of it. And it's gone, so I can experience it for me. It's a shared experience, although I might be doing the talking. It's a shared experience that belongs as much to you as to me. See, and one thing that used to rankle a little bit with me was, in all the thousands of lectures I've given across the world, you know, from a Scientology orientation, people wanted the tapes. And I used to say, fine, it is our experience. You are as welcome to it as you wish to be. And if you want the tapes, good. It's not for me to say yes or no. It's our experience, and you are as much part of it as I. And if you want to re-experience that, get the tape by all means, but they were not allowed to get the tape, you see. And that to me was, again, you know, sort of something they couldn't communicate about, so their communication release was being shut off just a little. So, anyway, cut a long story short, you get then, like there is a flow taking place from you to me, from me to you. And to the extent that we feel, you know, that we are getting lighter, freer, expanding, increasing our realities, looking right across the whole of the universe and then the series of universes, occupying viewpoints that suddenly are like the loveliest music or the most, say, beautiful magic of existence. It's because we are doing it. And we are, I can never go further, for instance, than what you give me to go, you know, when I'm talking. Because that would jar the magic of the shared experience. There would be no point from what I want to do, because for me it is us, each of us, and the ultimate is when we are all as infinitely free as we can be. We don't want one lame one. You want everyone knowing and free, knowing and free. You can have your own particular individuality in that, and I can have mine in each one of us. But the game is going to be tremendous, not with me knowing a little bit more, anyone knowing a little bit more, but with all of us knowing, all of us being free. That's when, and then there will be no status, you see, in that truth. There will be none. Like the first pair, what will that be? You know, it won't be anything, because, as I said just during the break, you are your own first pair. I'm not your first pair. You are your own first pair. You are the Messiah you seek. You always have been and you always will be. So find yourself. You know, each one of you, to the extent you haven't, find yourself. Find the whole of the infinite magic of you. And then, of course, that of others. Because it has made life so much more worthwhile for me, and I've seen it make life so much more worthwhile for so many others. And here Jack has started off something. It isn't in its infancy, in actual fact. It started off at a very, very high level of knowing and understanding, and integrating knowing with understanding in the physical universe, and putting out some tools for you to use. So you can go out and you can sing it across the whole of your country, and sing it across the planet, and sing it across the universe. You know, like Camelot. Tell all England, he said, King Arthur, to that little boy. Tell all England that we have this magic message, might for right, not might is right. They know that from the Knights of the Round Table. Well, here you can go and tell them. You know, tell the whole world that there is another way. It's like there's another birth. You know, like the three wise men that came and they followed the star and so on. There was a way. That is all that happened. And a body came and got a name. And it communicated, and the being communicated through that body, a way. All right, something happened with the way. Now you have another way here. Like, just, you know, you arrived here. You saw a notice or whatever. And so you have started on another way, taken another step. And so we all have today taken some more steps. And we've moved somewhere where we feel a little better than we did before. Because we are agreeing on what we are. And that isn't just necessarily reality, but we're letting each other be. And we're looking. And I hope that you're looking right inside me and seeing everything about me. Whatever it might be, you are welcome to look. And I hope that you will let me do the same with you. Because you are playing to me. Now, is there anyone here who would like to say anything at this level, talking?
I'd like to ask you a question, John. Referring to a little while back, you were talking about the relationship that you had, where you had an agreement with someone on honesty, and you got to a point in telling that story. But I wonder how you handle it as far as when a person makes an agreement like that with you and then they get to a point where they do something and they don't want you to know about it, and but they refuse and you lay it out on the table because you are really deaf to what's going on, and you say, you know, come on, be honest, you know, it's so important, and they refuse to communicate, then what?
Well, that is where I... A disconnection is such a horrible thing, you know, but nevertheless, sometimes it's better to put some distance. But I'm now 6,000 miles or 7,000 or 10,000 miles away from the person I'm talking about. And in this distance, physical distance, I have been able to put together these various lookings, you see, to see what have I got here. You see, that enables me to be heard. Now, and so I've been trying to... and looking at how I can create that safer and safer and safer and safer space. You see, then I realized I might be taking away a person's games that the person didn't even know about yet. You know, the little games of hide and seek that a being might have with himself that are part of his havingness. And if he doesn't know about it himself yet, and he's hiding these things from himself, how dare I just come, boom, and explode them all away? Because some people, you will notice, play these games with themselves. And this is what's happening here. And I suddenly thought, God, what right have I to go there and just make it so that he's got no game left until he's realized for himself? You see, this is simple. I'm looking at it and say, it isn't a past tense thing. It is something I am handling. And that with you this afternoon, I took a few stages further so that you could see me more clearly. You know, and I could see you more clearly, maybe. Right. Which one? No, I'm talking, that's physical universe stuff. Now, Theta and Fury, let's look at it. If you are just a being, now you have no body, you are capable of any level of emotion. And you see something that this goes into a whole new thing, doesn't it? It's like, would you see that there? In the physical universe, can you be furious about something because you see it? And you understand it, that's another thing. Actually, it's a nice point. Because if I can totally duplicate that, I'll take it out of existence. But there is a feeling. I call it Theta and Fury simply because it was not an upset. You know, like I could see that, and the person kept doing that. And you duplicate it out of existence, they still went on doing it. Now that wouldn't be an A-syllable, that would be a Thetan fury with another Thetan, say, or a being furious with another being, because a being continues to put out the same thing, even though you've indicated that it's not, a creative thing. Is that a little clearer?
Well, I sort of like the idea of the Thetan fury.
Yeah.
And there are things that it's appropriate to be angry.
That's right, if you just see it as it is.
But that seems to be inconsistent with the other idea that you're only upset.
Mm.
I think there are those two things and they aren't
too separate. Yeah, but at the technology level of level 3, say, as they've got it in Scientology, that level, where it's just to do with handling ARC break, that was the point I was making there. This is sort of like something else where you see as is. And you see as is, and you see as is, and you see as is, and every time you see as is, you are duplicating it out of existence, but the guy continues to put it there. It isn't a stuck mock-up.
I mean, it's true that most people are upset with their own pictures, or else they wouldn't get rid of the upset by running it out.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. But it does seem to be also true that people are upset, and rightly so, about things that aren't really pictures.
Yeah, there is a difference. Right.
Does an individual need another person to go free? In other words, if we have to get out of this, like two different viewpoints, or could he go free on his own?
People have infinite potential. So the answer to that is you don't have to have, but it's certainly very helpful. Even now, I prefer, for instance, to co-audit with someone than to just audit myself. I much prefer it, you know, that shared things, and boy, do you get it faster when it's just like that, you know. Like when Jack and I get together, it's just boom, you know, and these sort of bubbles just bursting on this sort of co-audit. And that's quite something.
What is the reason for that? Why it doesn't come faster, you know, two people that
wouldn't just want to acknowledge it? It isn't necessarily so. Another one might prefer to do it another way. But it's like where two or three are gathered together, maybe things do move a little faster. Right.
In Jack's literature, I noticed a reference to an empire of OT2 and OT3. I have no idea what OT2 and 3 are. Unless it's the empire of some story about Christ, you know, the distance still over the earth. If you expand on that just a little, John.
No, well, I won't expand on the technology simply because it's confidential stuff, but that's not on OT3 or any of those OT levels that Christ is just a myth. It is just, it's another thing that Ron put out. See, there's something to be differentiated here. There's Jesus of Nazareth. And then there is something that the Romans decided about 300 years later, when they decided to acknowledge Jesus. They did what they did with the thing they called Jesus Christ. And they're two different things. But Ron Hubbard has put out that Jesus Christ never existed in one of his bulletins. But it has nothing to do with the technology. He's just put that out. But he didn't differentiate Jesus of Nazareth with Jesus Christ. I don't know whether he intended to or not. Right. So then, once again, I don't know when I shall be seeing you again. I shall see some of you, I dare say, before I head off. I thank you so much for being here and for having wanted me to come. And I hope that, you know, out of this, there are enough of us to do so many wonderful things for people. See the things that are going on that aren't optimum. See them, know them. You know, like, one does need law, one does need policemen, one does need these things at this time, because that's the way it is. And you acknowledge it for what it is. But don't spend all your time, you know, in relation to Scientology. For me, it has been a fantastic experience. I am glad that it is there, or was there for me. And I hope that for those of you who use it, that it will be, you know, you will look at it as a tremendous experience. Then you pop out of it and you fly where you will fly. And now here's Jack with Dianology, which is not going to be called Dianology, and I think that is marvelous. Because here now is the real, you know, thing where in the ultimate, each one will evolve his technology for his freedom. Because that's where it's coming to. You know, that's where it's coming to. It's going to be lovely. Just so lovely. And then we sit there and just ripple with laughter. Anyway, thank you very much for another day that I have loved. And may you have many, many more. And I'll be sharing them with you, and you share mine with me. Thank you.
Thank you, John.